April Morley.
And welcome to the Value Coffee Talk podcast.
This podcast is a service of the Enterprise Value Collective, a community for business value-focused leaders and practitioners, and is sponsored by our value consultancy, Genius Drive.
And our mission is to help accelerate and optimize value articulation in each of your customer engagements and throughout the customer lifecycle. And we're here with our CRO perspective session with a CRO, Ken Powell. He's a global operating executive, and he's had roles as a CRO, but also as a chief customer officer, a CEO, a COO, a president. He's been in venture capital and private equity for a while as well. 25 plus years of achievements in public, private equity, venture capital structured organizations. He's currently the chief revenue officer at fintech and accounting software firm K1X. Welcome, Ken.
Welcome, Ken.
Hey, Tom. How are you doing? Hi, April. Looking forward to, hopefully I can bring some value on this value coffee talk.
And I like the way you say coffee talk. It's definitely the New York way, Ken.
There you go.
Tell us, Ken, you know, I love origin stories, and I want to go way back machine with you. How did you get your start in sales? What motivated you to take a career in sales?
I wish it was an elaborate story, but I came out of college and I had a buddy who was working in sales, and I knew that teaching wasn't going to put dollars in my pocket the way I wanted. And he said, you should give this a try. And I started selling printing. I guess that's about 25 years ago. So getting people to, convincing people to buy printing, and running around the streets of, Jersey City in Newark, New Jersey was, certainly a, trial by fire.
So it was really door to door at that point then.
It was door to door. I remember doing my early prospecting in the library and, taking a map out and looking at, a list of potential accounts and trying to figure out a way to optimize my territory, and always been a staple of the way that I've thought about commercial roles is, you know, trying to do things most efficiently and effectively. And as I kind of follow the breadcrumbs back to those days, I guess I started that really early on. A little bit more automated these days.
Yeah, I love that. It probably gives you a real perspective on making a connection with your potential customer if they're right in front of you. So how do you think the sales game has changed since the early days?
Wow. Where do we start? How long do we have?
20 minutes.
Everything's quicker, faster today, as we all know. Like every function, I think all the, as much of the rote activities that we can pull out of them are being automated today. Commercial leaders who really want to stay ahead are thinking three steps ahead on, you know, what things can we automate, what things don't make sense today. And you know, I've also seen that percolate down into the best sellers. I think about one of the ladies that works on our team right now who was just an avid social media poster, and I said, gosh, how are you doing that? And you know, lo and behold, she got up on the Monday of every single week and was using ChatGPT to set up her kind of cadence for the week. And what probably would have taken someone a material amount of time, even months ago, to do is now, you know, she's able to do it within, you know, the time it takes for her to have coffee on a Monday morning.
Yeah. Completely agree that you've got to automate those key tasks. When it comes to buyers, they've changed as well, Ken, from back in, you know, your early days, or even from 18 months ago. Talk a little bit about the changes in the buying environment that you're seeing.
It's just elongated and more complex with more decision makers that need to weigh in and get involved. I think the salesperson and the salesperson is more of a change agent inside an organization, a facilitator of change, meaning that getting the buyer to think differently. Mm-hmm. So getting them to change their mind, getting the stakeholders in the organization to think differently about how they might perform work in their business. A change agent perhaps on the side of their company and getting maybe to think differently about how we might want to contract with a client or make it much, much more friendly to work with, which I guess is perhaps another change that we've seen. I often will joke and say that I can't remember the last time I went into a restaurant and ordered exactly what was on the menu. It's always give me a little bit of this with a little bit of that, and I don't want this. So hyper-personalization and the ability to kind of balance a standard approach with configuration for a client, whether it's how their software works, how their contracting works, and so forth, I think is a balance that we've all worked through. I think the other trend that's starting to really emerge, I guess, over the last 12 months that I've seen is, and perhaps you've seen it as well in your own personal life, is I think people are tired of subscription. And like the whole idea that another piece of software for a per month charge and so forth is starting to exhaust the world. And what I've seen more and more, and we see this with AWS as one classic example, where you know usage or value-based pricing is becoming far more the way in which the market wants to work, which opens up, I think, the next level of what is materially changing inside the world, which is fast follower adoption. So, software consumed at the beginning of a relationship and then its value over an extended period of time is becoming far more where the conversation's going and the depth in which you can create operational cadence, selling cadence, communication with your clients that connects the experience from the initial point of contact through the full life cycle and demonstrate that value along the way in their usage and their NPS score and their ROI and all the things that you guys know as well as I do much better than I do. Those things are so super important today. And the trend is just continuing to go in that direction.
I love those points. Going back to the second one, you talked about how there's an increase in buyer complexity and buying teams. And then you're seeing that, a sales team member might be more focused on being a change agent, both for the client organization, and it sounded like also for the organization that they work for, and kind of connecting the needs of the customer to some of the opportunity that the company has to support them, even if it doesn't exist today. Is that how you see it playing out? And what does a great change agent look like as it continues to grow more complex?
They're someone that sits in the middle as an advocate on both sides. They're well versed in the business strategy of both organizations, meaning that they are astute in listening and combining where the customer is trying to go with what does the product and or solution set do. They're forward facing and forward thinking in that they are relentlessly focused on closing a piece of business, but they are thinking about the next two pieces that can be bolted on. They're thinking about how the client will derive value as they continue to consume and use more. They're able to paint a picture for success for the client, and they're really good at making that a clean handoff to the onboarding organization. So, the sale doesn't stop at the signature. It really just becomes the cementing of the beginning of that relationship, and it carries through to your onboarding teams and quickly to your client success teams and so forth. So they're just a multifaceted business leader is the best way that I could kind of encapsulate it, where they can think in the realm of what does a P&L look like and the ins and outs of it on both sides of the business. And they're able to orchestrate a complex set of inputs, some of which are large market-facing trends, some of which are product roadmap issues, some of which are client business issues, and help put it all together into a vision for the future and a plan of action. And, you know, as I'm saying it, you kind of sit there and say, geez, that's what type of person are we trying to create here? Like, that's a lot to put on the backs of one person. And the reality is that frontline salesperson and the leadership that leads that has really had to evolve. And as we see more applications of automation coming in place to disintermediate a lot of the rote tasks, more the opportunity for that person to up level and upskill and continue to bring more value. So when you think of the contradictory side to AI and the fears that we have on it, I think account executives say, bring it on, because it just means that I move up the stack and the value that I can bring.
Very, very true, Ken. One of the things I know that you faced at K1X and some of the other PE and VC backed firms that you've worked for is you go in and it's founder driven. It often is not scalable yet. It is very much product led. So the demo and the features and the functions are predominant. And one of the things you had to do at K1X was take that and now convert it into something different, something much more value centric. Talk about why that's so important and some of the challenges you faced in doing it and what you did to be so successful.
Yeah, I've been in, as you mentioned, I've been in many businesses, experiencing many founders, many different stage companies. I feel really privileged for the opportunity I'm here now, given our founder, who has really been a change agent herself, first in the work that she was doing prior to us incorporating as a standalone business, just being a change agent for the entire industry, a change agent inside her organization. So that DNA has really seeped over into the way that we've thought and quite frankly has made us scaling and growing so much easier, because we're kind of operating from a similar mindset that change is important and change is a constant and so forth. But I think you're asking maybe a slightly different question, which is, generally speaking, what maybe makes that really, really difficult, and how do you overcome it? I don't have a secret bullet. I think it's, you know, you read any book on change management, and they're probably the same principles that we've applied. You help paint a great picture for what the future looks like. You get a guiding coalition of people who are super, super supportive. You find early successes and wins, and you know, promote those up in your organization, outside your organization, just rewinding the playbook and running it again. I guess the thing that's really changed is the stakes are higher and the game is faster. So you need to be able to do that stuff 2x, 3x, what you may be able to do that could have done in the past. And in smaller companies, even more important, because the earlier you can make a change, the quicker you make an impact, and you know, and changes in a smaller company just materially go a lot further, a lot faster. So, yeah, I wish I had secret sauce on that one, but just rerunning the book.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, there's a lot of different change management frameworks, but you know, at the end of the day, it's really about inspiring people in the organization to make a change. And you had talked about how the teams are dealing with more complexity, how we're asking more of them. What are some of the levers that you've seen to be really successful in getting the ball moving forward? So is it, you know, creating content for them? Is it providing a training for them? Like, what is really getting the conversation started?
The client side internally, or within an organization?
Inside the organization, let's say with
everyone,
sales team, customer success team, sales engineering.
Everyone, I think everyone needs a rally cry and a march towards something. I don't believe anyone gets up any single day and says, I want to do a lousy job at work. I don't think they say, I want to do uninspiring things. I think, and especially as we move into a generation that's much more purpose driven and so forth, you know, an entire executive team needs to be very concrete, be very steadfast, be very clear in the march towards X, whether that's getting something out in the market by a particular time, whether it's growing the business from X to Y, whether it's accomplishing a project in timeframe Z. I think being very concrete with that is really important. The other thing that I suppose if I could really think about it is probably like those who kind of show consistent results, meaning like we said we would do this, we did it. The next thing we're going to do is this, and being very consistent with your communication, consistent with the way in which you show up as a leader, consistent in the way you measure success. You know, I've seen some really cool things. You know, one of the things that I've seen in more than one company that's very, very effective and much more probably like common today, at least from what I've seen as a best practice, is the cascading application of OKRs. So when companies really rally around having a good set of OKRs, a good set of cascading discipline from the top level of the business all the way down to the individual contributor and how their day in and day out impact can contribute to that. And then using software or other technologies that exist in the market to kind of track that and report that seems to be like a best practice that if I was trying to advise an early stage company or any company in particular, but an early stage founder or CEO, I mean, that playbook works really well.
Ken, one of the things that you're mentioning is this culture. And one of the incredible things that you did with the team through marketing into outreach, into sales, and into success was you weaved value into everything. So there was a big change that occurred when you came on board. As you said, you had a lot of support to get that done, but all of a sudden, everything you outreach with, everything that was posted on social, the sales engagements, it all became extremely value focused. Now, that didn't mean you abandoned the product demonstration and showing off the incredible aspects of the solution. But talk about how important that was to kind of have value weaved into everything and have it be part of the culture of how you were going to be value focused with customers.
I suppose in a market where traditionally like change is very difficult, being able to help quantify for a customer the cost of change and the cost of no change is really important for, I guess, on one side, the justification for the purchase, I guess on another side, the, you know, the quantification of the purchase and the return that it has on the business. You know, when things get tough, either, you know, before you sign a deal, somewhere in the relationship, and anywhere, like staying anchored on what's really important, which is the overall value in which the solution or combination of solutions has to a company is a good anchoring component for building a long lasting relationship. So, you know, in negotiations, we focus a whole bunch on making sure that we describe value in our client success organization. We make sure that we spend a whole bunch of time designing what mutual success plans look like and what value means together. And then through, you know, some of the tools that we've worked together to build, we help to demonstrate that and lay it out in a very simple, consumable way so that especially in organizations that require many decision makers to weigh in or stakeholders to have an opinion on, you know, a particular initiative that takes place, being able to hand something over and really lay out the business plan and the business case in clear terms is really important.
Awesome. And so, over the next couple of years, how do you see the role of the CRO evolving?
Good question. I think it's going to, let me just step back to answer that question. I think the role of the CRO is still misunderstood. Mm-hmm. What I see is the title CRO is a fancy title for a head of sales. And so I still think there's runway on the CRO role becoming much more of a, much more of a standard in terms of what does that mean? Full revenue management, yeah. Full looking at lead to cash in its totality and all the ins and outs that go on that. Mm-hmm. So I think over the next couple of years, you'll see more unification around that as a standard definition for what the role will be. And what it emerges to beyond that, I don't know. AI is too quick for me to guess what it'll look like. It'll probably look like something we don't know.
I like that perspective though, Ken, that CRO needs to even just fill the role that it's been designed for instead of evolving to something new. So I think we definitely have some work to do there. What's the one piece of advice you'd like to leave our enterprise value collective with, our community with today, Ken?
Go get smart on AI. Go get smart on how to drive adoption. Go get smart on what does product-led growth look like. Go continue to think about and use analytics to drive your business. And if you're a chief revenue officer, go find yourself the best revenue ops person you can, because the role of revenue ops, which perhaps in the future you guys will do a session on that, I think is one of the fastest growing roles in the United States and one of the most critical roles inside any organization, whether you are an early stage company, middle stage company, or late stage company. So
awesome. Thank you so much for joining us on the Value Coffee Talk podcast, Ken.
Thank you.
If you haven't done so yet, hit the like button, subscribe to stay up to date on the latest episodes. Sign up for the Enterprise Value Collective, LinkedIn, geniusdrive.com website to stay in touch on the latest tools. We've got some great research, insights, and other resources for you to take advantage of. And until next time, our Enterprise Value Collective, keep sharing and growing.